Okay. About a month ago, did anybody see this headline in the New York Times or the story that it's based on? It says, "Diocese condemns funeral of trans activist."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
About a month ago. About a month ago, more than 1,000 people gathered at St. Patrick's Cathedral to honor the life of Cecilia Gentile, a trans icon who had died suddenly the week before. The article reports that the pews were packed with mourners, many of them transgender, who wore daring, high fashion outfits and cheered as eulogists led them in praying for transgender rights and access to gender-affirming care. How Cecilia's chosen family secured the space is a bit of a mystery, as the archdiocese disavowed any advanced knowledge of it. Once the party got going, however, a wave of fear gripped the cathedral staff. The Reverend Enrique Salvo, pastor of St. Patrick's, told the Times, "The cathedral only knew that family and friends were requesting a funeral mass for a Catholic, and had no idea our welcome and prayer would be degraded in such a sacrilegious and deceptive manner." And yes, he used the S word, calling the event a scandal. Of course, when a church cries scandal, it is often feverishly trying to deflect attention from some scandal of its own. Rather than look inward, of course, the archdiocese doubled down. After the mourners had left, the cathedral held a special mass of reparation to atone for the funeral. A mass of reparation is a kind of liturgical cleansing designed to seek forgiveness for gross offenses. It is called a mass of reparation because it's supposed to work to repair God's heart broken by our sin. In recent years, several dioceses have held masses of reparation to atone for the sins of Catholic clergy who have sexually abused children. Who was this woman whose funeral so scandalized the archdiocese? Cecilia Gentile was born to a poor family in northern Argentina. Sexually abused throughout her childhood, she came out as trans while still in Argentina and turned to sex work to survive. When she arrived in the United States in 2000, she was homeless, undocumented, and exploited by sex traffickers. She had a heroin addiction and spent time on Rikers Island, where she was raped and beaten. When she got out, she went into rehab, determined to make a better life for herself and for people who were walking the same path she had walked. Sex work, it turned out, had given her marketable skills. She knew how to work the phones and had a real gift for customer service. She started working for community health projects focused on HIV prevention and trans health services. She rose to become director of policy at GMHC, and in 2018 founded Trans Equity Consulting, a DEI firm that advocates for trans women of color, sex workers, immigrants, and people in the carceral system. She was also an amazing storyteller who wrote and starred in two autobiographical off-Broadway shows. Her Times obituary notes that she landed a role in the series Pose, playing, I quote, "a sketchy body enhancer armed with a syringe of filler." Cecilia always credited her indigenous Argentinian grandmother with saving her life spiritually and physically. Cecilia told the story of how her grandmother let her wear her jewelry and clothes. One Sunday, she took young Cecilia to church, bedecked in her jewelry. When the pastor expressed shock, her abu rebuked him and never returned.
Oh, wow.
"That was the end of church," Ms. Gentile later wrote to her grandmother, "but not of your relationship with God. You continued to read the Bible to me every night until I fell asleep with most of your jewelry on." Thus it was her grandmother and not her pastor who was the model for her greatest role in life as mentor and mother to countless queer and trans New Yorkers. Cecilia had dedicated her life to the work that the church claims to be its stock in trade, a fact that was not lost on Cecilia's family. Last month, responding to the scandalized cathedral, they said, "Her hearts and hands reach those that the sanctimonious church continues to belittle, oppress, and chastise." They took inspiration from Ms. Gentile, they said, for how she ministered, mothered, and loved all people. So what's the true scandal in this story? In our scripture reading this evening, Jesus has a thing to say about this. And I wrote about it in Queer Virtue, so with your kind indulgence, I want to just read you a passage from the book. The scandal of Christianity is completely intentional. The entire thrust of the Christian message is supposed to make our jaws drop, our eyes open as wide as they can go as we stammer, but that's not the way things are supposed to be. The Gospels communicate this in an interesting way. Instead of just saying over and over again, "Be shocked, be very shocked," the Bible tells us stories in which people trip over this inherent scandalousness. We watch the protagonists of these stories struggle, and we listen to what Jesus says to them about it. The most dramatic of these stories is an encounter between Peter and Jesus. Peter is a stock character actor in these little vignettes about how people struggle with what Jesus was up to. He specializes in roles that are designed to look clueless, shallow, or just plain dumb. Mm-hmm. The scene that Jesus and Peter have over the scandal of the cross is really just the worst for poor Peter. Jesus has just told the disciples that he's heading for Jerusalem where he's going to suffer and be killed. Peter wigs out. The text says that Peter pulls Jesus aside and begins to rebuke him. Can you imagine rebuking Jesus? Peter says, "God forbid it, Lord. This must never happen to you." Does Jesus place his hand compassionately on Peter's shoulder and help him to process this difficult truth? No. Jesus is pissed. He assaults Peter with perhaps the most withering statement in the entire gospel: "Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." Peter is basically saying that he's scandalized by this idea that Jesus is going to suffer and be killed. Jesus responds by calling Peter a stumbling block to him. The Greek word is scandalon. In all of Christian scripture, this is the only time when the word scandalon is used to refer to an individual person. And here's something else. This little drama unfolds just 2 verses after the scene in which Jesus renames Peter and, in a famous wordplay, makes Peter the founder of his church on earth. "And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock, Petra, I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven." 1 minute Jesus is identifying Peter as the guy who's going to lead his movement on earth. The next minute, Peter goes all establishment and begins reprimanding Jesus for the scandal of his fate. Jesus is astonished. "You are going to be scandalized by me?" Jesus understands how powerfully human society is drawn to safety, to respectability. He sees clearly that the church's need to be respectable, to be safe, will lead it inexorably to struggle with the scandal he is about to become. That's why Jesus calls Peter out on this again right after the Last Supper. "You will all become deserters because of me," he says, using the verb form of scandalon. Peter stamps his foot in furious protest. "Though all are scandalized because of you, I will never desert you." But the sun has already set, and in just a few hours, that cock is going to crow. This is a cautionary tale extraordinaire for those with religious authority and Mother Church specifically. You are not above being scandalized by the very message you proclaim. Beware just how easily you can become a tool of Satan, a scandal to Jesus himself, even as you stand there jangling those keys to heaven. Last month, Cecilia's family stood as a giant mirror, revealing the true scandal in this situation. That the church, which is supposed to lift up people on the margins, in fact perpetuates the very violence that keeps them there. That Peter's church actively turns away multitudes of people hungry for spiritual community, kicking them out, locking the door, and sanitizing the place to remove any taint of defilement from those on the dirty margins. This is a church screaming koinos, defilement, not a church offering koinonia, community. Get behind me, Satan, indeed. But let us beware of becoming sanctimonious Christians ourselves. Mm-hmm. It is easy for us to dump on St. Patrick's, but we accomplish nothing if we don't take this opportunity to examine our own hearts and our own actions. It's no surprise that 1,000 or more queer and trans folks would reflect back the scandal and hypocrisy of the Archdiocese of New York. What are we as a Christian community doing? How are we stepping into scandal to challenge powerful people in our tradition? At St. Lydia's, we've talked about this a lot, we tend to focus and uplift the work that we do as individuals out in the world, promoting justice as members of other, often secular, organizations. But the scandal of faith is never visible when it is expressed in isolation by individuals or expressed by organizations that do not speak the language of faith in their activism. We're almost to the end of Lent, and with it, the end of this season exploring Christian scandal. We have already come face to face with challenging questions. How can we reclaim Christian scandal as a force for good? What would it look like for St. Lydia's to do that? As we walk the walk of Holy Week starting next Sunday, I beg you to ponder these questions in your heart. After Easter, let's gather in community and talk about it. And even though I just want to say we are a small group here, some of the people sitting around this table are some of the most important voices in this community. Your ponderings about this can help us explore a whole new way of witnessing Christian faith. How can we reclaim Christian scandal as a force for good? What would it look like for St. Lydia's to do that? These are arguably the most important questions that any queer-affirming Christian community can be asking itself right now. I want to close by reading Cecilia's own words about one of her mentors, Lorena Borjas, who died of COVID in 2020. In a tribute published by the New York Times, Cecilia wrote, "Together we walked up and down Roosevelt Avenue in Queens, handing out condoms and referrals to my clinic to the girls. As we walked, we talked about abuse, addiction, men, shame. We talked about how she felt she had a higher calling to help people who were walking the same path as she had before. The respect and dignity that she gave to our struggle was the ultimate empowerment. She pushed us to shine authentically, to become an unstoppable insubordination, a scream of subversion that says, I am here and I deserve happiness too. Some rare magic has left us, but Ms. Borjas leaves a network of activists whom she nurtured and who have mobilized in her wake. Today, so many people are saying exactly the same things about Cecilia Gentile. May we, as people of faith, be worthy of her rare magic.